Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. One of the things I've done over the years is tried a little bit of dyeing of fabrics because, you know, sometimes you just want that special color or you want to change something. And, you know, it's a lot of fun and it's a process. And I was so excited when I found the book, The Modern Natural Dyer, because this is just such a well done book and has a wealth of information if you're interested in dyeing your own fabric or learning about it. And I have the author, Christine Vejar, here, and she has been doing this for years and is going to give us some insider tips. So, Christine, thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Tell me just a little backstory. When did you first discover that you really liked to change the way things looked?
Yeah, you know, I had grown up knitting and sewing with my grandmother and her circle of friends in rural Illinois. I had gone to California to college. Part of my education, I went to India to study art and architecture. Mm. And while I was there, I came to learn that textiles were just all over. Every kind of textile, every process of making them. So everyone from, you know, someone at home embroidering to seeing actual dye that to seeing people weaving. And it was kind of the first time where I thought, oh, you know, I'd gone to the fabric store all the time to pick up my fabric, but I hadn't given a lot of thought as to how it was made. So I ended up working with a group of nomadic herders way, way, way out in the desert. They do this beautiful form of both embroidery and applique. So they make these beautiful quilts covered with applique and camel covers.
Wow.
Camel is kind of the transportation of choice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, India is kind of far away, pretty different than here. And so I think the idea that looking at quilts, which is something I grew up around, made me feel more at home, and that the way the women gathered around and stitched together gave me some kind of comfort. So what they do there is each thing they applique is a symbol and a motif of an idea or an object that they find powerful. So I kind of began to really look at cloth and think, oh, wow, you know, cloth communicates. And one could have control over what you want to communicate with cloth.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to India on a Fulbright grant to continue my research, and that whole region of India has many different types of textile going on.
So what part of India? What part of India was that?
This is in northwestern India in a state called Gujarat, and
okay.
The region is called the Great Rann of Kutch.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
and
you did
so there,
a bit more.
I'm sorry.
So you did a bit more research on that, and you decided.
Yes. But then I met a group of natural dyers who have been dying for, I don't know, probably 3,000 years, and I started learning about natural dyeing from them.
Now,
so that's
when
kind of what brought me to dyeing.
When you say natural dyeing, can you give an example? I mean, were you talking plants? Or is it something else?
Yeah. So, pretty much it's plants. So like madder comes from the root of the madder plant. Indigo comes from a leaf. There is one insect called cochineal. That's a scale insect that grows on the Nepal cactus and, has a very, very long history in South and Central America. And a big reason why Europeans wanted to travel to this part of the world originally was looking for color and specifically finding cochineal and wanting to have that color pink because we hadn't had that color pink before that.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, you know, it's
yeah.
Like there's so much great information. Like the book you lay out by do you lay it out by type of color to, you know, to get to the people, like if they want to do pink, do you have like a section on pink?
Yeah. So the book is laid out where kind of the moment, like there's an introduction, but once you get, you know, beyond that couple pages, you open into this, what I call the catalog of color. That's what I've termed it for the last couple of years. I've been working on it. And it's just this kind of beautiful 20-page spread of, I mean, I had to narrow it down. So it's 20 dyes, or maybe 22. But the pages are just filled with what the dye looks like. So, you know, the different forms it's available in, but also just all these different fabrics and ribbons and yarns that have been dyed with that specific dye per page, so the reader really can get a sense of what natural dyes can provide. And I did this because I wanted the book to be really, really beautiful. So I have the armchair dyer in mind, so maybe someone who, you know, isn't, doesn't want to dye, or at this time in their life isn't prepared to start dyeing, but they want to know just one more part of a textile making process.
Right.
And they want to just indulge in like this world of color and texture.
Well, the photography is gorgeous. I mean, for, you know, just like you said, you could just come in here and use it as an education tool and read. But you have things like I just did this in my class the other day, Christine. Somebody needed to tone down a piece of fabric to go in her project. And so we just boiled a cup of tea. And so you talked a section on tea. I love that.
Yeah, tea dyeing is one of the most easiest direct forms to just add a little something. And especially it works really well with cotton and linen fabric. So that's great. Yeah, there's a tea dyeing recipe in my book.
So what is the easiest natural, you know, dye besides tea, because you know, most people have tea bags, but what other kind of plant can people use that to get an intro into this?
Yeah, so the general process of using natural dyes, especially, you know, my clients, we have a very bustling natural dyeing studio, and we make yarn and fabric, naturally dyed yarn and fabric. And one of the kind of strict requirements of my clientele is really strong color fastness, you know, so that you can wash the piece and the piece can be exposed to some amount of light, and the color stays put. So, and the way that I teach the book is in that kind of frame of reference. So the most important thing first is to always have your fabric very well washed. We call this scouring. We want to remove as many of the starches that are put on in the weaving process. And, you know, plants like cotton have a lot of wax in their structure. That's what helps them stand up, you know, when you see a flower. So we want to, though, get that wax out of the plant because it resists color. So we wash it really well. And then we go through a process called mordantine. And I teach all of this in the book. And mordantine is a binder. It's what attaches to the fabric. And then the dye attaches to the binder. So once those two processes are completed, which don't take very long, then you can start going into the world of color. At that point, any dye will work on the fabric that I've listed in the book.
So really wouldn't be like one was more difficult to work with than another?
Not really. Not once you've completed, you know, the scouring and mordantine, you kind of open the door to a pretty wide range of color, and they're all pretty much the same. The only kind of branch that comes out that is different and has its own whole section in the book is indigo dyeing.
Oh, okay.
Which people love indigo.
Yes.
Right?
That deep navy.
So in that part of the process, you don't have to mordant the fabric. You want to have well-washed fabric, but you can jump right into the indigo dyeing. So, you know, there's that too for fun.
Yeah, very fun. You and the thing that I like too is that you gave a lot of suggestions for you know, for people who don't want to like make a, you know, you use everyday items that they can over dye to try out the process without having to go through, you know, something really crazy, because like you have socks, they've over you've over dyed cotton socks.
So that way the person is done, right? When they're done with the dyeing, they've got a cute object, or if something's kind of worn out a little bit, you can add the life back into it, you know, like placemats, for instance, cloth napkins.
Yeah.
You can overdye all that.
Yeah. And you actually have a shop in where, Oakland, California?
Yeah, over for keeping warm.
Okay. So, and there you, did I read properly? You have actually a dying garden?
Yeah, we have an educational natural dying garden.
That's amazing.
If you visit, yeah, you can see the different examples of the plants that we use in the dying process. Mm-hmm. It really brings it home for a lot of people, you know, makes the connection.
Right, to be able to walk through and touch the plant and know that that's the one that's going to create pink or yellow or whatever. Do you
Absolutely.
Teach? You teach this in your shop, and do you also have any online classes?
Yeah, I filmed with Creative Bug, and those classes will be released starting in January.
Okay.
So we're looking at 2016 to have kind of a year-long modern natural dyer-centered dialogue so that people can participate and post their projects online and connect with one another as they learn about the natural dyeing process. And so the Creative Bug videos will be there so you can see me working and get a sense of the timing and, you know, the rhythm of working with natural dyes.
Right. And also your website, you do a lot of writing of articles there so that people can just go and get additional reading about it besides from the book. You have some, you know, like other, I'm looking at a picture now where you've got a big vat of dye and you're, you know, working some things in it. So that's, how often do you post there?
It fluctuates depending upon our schedule, but I would probably say like, on average, once per 2 weeks, sometimes three times a week. Sometimes, you know, we can't get something up. But, we blog pretty regularly for the last, I don't know how many years now, 5 years or so.
Yeah. This has been so educational. Your book is gorgeous. Congratulations on all that hard work. That's a lot of work.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to get it in the hands of the makers and to see what people do with it. There's 20 projects in it, so I think there's a lot of different opportunity for how people want to interface with it. There is a quilt pattern. So, yeah. Can't wait.
It's just wonderful. And thank you for being here and giving us all this super information, Christine.
Thank you, Pat. Have a great day.
Okay. We will be right back with American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Okay, that's it, Christine.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Sometimes I just think that, well, all the time, I think the internet is just the most amazing thing. You're listening to me on the internet right now. And what I can do is I can see something that's being made across the country from me almost at the same moment the person shares their work. And I'm very lucky that my guest today did share her work and is sharing her work with all of us because it is just wonderful. So I have Colleen Barnhart here of the Quilted Thistle, and she is doing some incredible work, some incredible designing that I want to learn about. So thanks for being here, Colleen.
Thank you, Pat. I'm so excited to have this opportunity.
So tell me how you landed in the land of quilts, because it's fairly new for you, right?
It is fairly new, although it kind of goes way back. My great-grandma was a quilter and my grandmother, and so I kind of grew up around people who just did it. And I always envisioned myself someday being a little old lady that would quilt as well. But, you know, you go on and you grow up, and I didn't really explore that until I had my daughter and I decided I was going to make a quilt for her out of her nursery fabric leftovers. Mm-hmm. And I got towards the end of that project and put it away because I wanted it to look a certain way and with the quilting, and I knew that I didn't have the skills to do that. And then fast forward about 20 years, and I was recovering from a pretty serious illness. My doctors were saying, you need a hobby, you need a hobby. So I was like, I'm going to get a new sewing machine, and I'm going to pick quilting back up.
Okay.
And it didn't take me long to fall in love with machine quilting.
Uh-huh.
And now, that's kind of how I got there.
You know what I think is fascinating? I was reading your your background on your website, and you said that you pretty much went in and test drove a long arm.
Yes. So a year ago, in September, I had been thinking about some quilting ideas and wanting to learn more. And I said to my husband, we're going to go to a quilt show because I want to really learn what it is that I need to learn. And so we walked around the whole show, and I kept saying, I want to try one of those big machines. I really think I would like that. But then I would, you know, I would shy off because of the expense, and I wasn't working, and I didn't want to, you know, get too tempted. But my husband, before we left, said, no, you're going to drive one of these machines. That's why we're here. So I drove the machine, and I loved it. And I signed up for a class the following week, and I ordered a machine in the next couple of days. And I only had it, you know, it took about a month to get delivered and set up, and I'd only had it for about a month before I started taking customer quilts. So it has been a whirlwind year, because that was less than a year ago.
Oh my gosh, Colleen, it just, like, those are the stories that give you goosebumps.
You know, I just decided I was going to pour my whole heart and soul into this and see what happened. And it's been so exciting to see, you know, the possibilities that are opening up by following my heart. So it's just been an amazing experience.
Now, I have, you know, taught people to quilt for a long time, including the free motion part. And we're talking, you know, with the long arm. And then I also demoed for a while with a long arm company. I helped in their booth and demoed a sit down, but I also watched people trying that big machine, because it's a different process than when you sit and push fabric than when you drive the quilt. And you must be a natural at it.
I grew up in the country. I had three brothers. I was the youngest. I spent a lot of time by myself drawing and, you know, just making little things to occupy my hours. And my favorite toy was an Etch-a-Sketch growing up. So the long arm machine kind of works on the same principles. I think I just lucked out that all of these life experience that I had were so easily translatable into this art form, because, you know, I was especially special educator for almost 20 years, and I taught handwriting and, you know, all sorts of spatial planning and those sorts of things. So I think all of those life experiences just translated really well once I decided to give this a go.
So this was the machine, this was the technique and the machine that just syncs with you.
Yeah. It's just fun. It's all about the just putting my take and my art, finishing projects. I'm a very novice piecer. So I really love having these amazing quilts come to me from clients, and I get to explore all of the different quilting options, but I don't have to rely on my, not perfect piecing skills at this point. And I think that's also why I love whole cloth. You know, the coloring quilts that I do are essentially, they just start as a whole cloth. They are a whole cloth. And so I don't have to worry about those pieces that I haven't mastered yet.
Well, this is what I want to talk about, is your process and what you're doing, because you are sharing this out on your website. And if people go look right now at your August 30th, 2015, if they want to go back and look, that one is a good reference post. So this is the quilt that I saw online that you shared, is what you're calling your coloring quilts, which are tell me how this thought to come up with a whole cloth that you're creating this design on.
Well, you know, I was noticing as I was learning how to free motion that people were getting excited about what I call doodle quilting. As other artists call it graffiti quilting. There's, you know, a lot of different names for it. But essentially, it's just free motion designs that aren't necessarily pre-planned and, you know, turn out really fun. And I have also always been someone who has been a bit of a coloring book fanatic. Even before adult coloring books became the fad that it is right now, I, as an adult, was buying children's coloring books and just coloring because it was so meditative and relaxing and kind of allowed me to get my mind off of things. And I was developing this free motion, you know, these skills, and I was like, wow, how could I turn this into coloring quilt? Because everything for me this past year has been about quilting, right? I'm, everything in my life is how can I make this into a quilting thing? And and so I just started doing little pieces, and I was, you know, I'm an avid internet viewer and always looking for exciting things, and I saw people experimenting with applying colors and different mediums to quilts. And so I started doing little samples between customer projects, just to kind of keep me excited and try new things. And when I would share with friends, social media, or in my local guilds kind of what I was doing, everybody was super excited about it. And I thought, wow, this isn't just me. Other people are excited by this as well. And so let me try to learn a really good technique for this. And then, having been an educator for so long, you know, it just kind of naturally turns into, I want to teach other people how to do this and have this fun as well. And so that's kind of how it all came about. And my most recent project is, it's only 40 by 40, but it took over 100 hours to paint. So, you know, I'm slowly getting bigger and bigger in my projects, but I'm also trying to build a business at the same time. So, you know, there has to be balance. Yeah,
that's always the balance, Colleen, is when you want to do art that's not for, you know, you're not going to sell it maybe, or maybe you're going to enter in competition or something, but, you know, there's no, like, income coming in from that, but you're still then trying to run your other part of your business. It's that life balance, getting it all. You know. So let's talk a little bit about how you – are you teaching this now, the coloring quilts?
I am developing a workshop or a technique. You know, it's kind of all – the excitement has grown so fast, I'm trying to catch up with the demand. But I am going to be doing a workshop locally, and maybe if that's successful, I'll take it further afield. I also did a little video on YouTube. I look forward to maybe doing some more instructional pieces like that, because I love to share what I learn. But I just started developing my own doodling style, and I thought about, how could I teach people how to do this? And then that turned into lots of little samples, and then that turned into the coloring, and it's just evolved over the course of about 6 months here. Not even 6 months, probably about 4 or 5 months,
So this, tell me, we have about 2 minutes. So tell me the short process, you know, what do you, you know, the doodle, the painting, you know, how you do it in about 2 minutes.
Okay, so I set it up. It's just dye-ready white fabric and black thread. I throw it on my long arm. You could also do it on domestic if you have those skills. And I just apply my doodle style. You know, I don't really think about what it's going to look like when it finishes. I think I'm going to make this shape, and then I'm going to make this shape, and then I'm going to add this shape, and maybe I'm going to vary it and do it again. And when it gets done, I get to look at this black and white creation and think, now what color can I breathe this to life with? And I just start painting one. It's like a one-color process. Mm-hmm. I do all of one color, and then I decide what color I'm going to play with next, just like coloring in a coloring book. And I really don't spend a whole lot of time worrying about what it's going to look like at the end. It's really about the process, and I never know how it's going to turn out. And I think that's pretty exciting as well. So I've been just, you know, just learning how to be free and not
yeah.
be inhibited.
What kind of paint are you using?
Currently, I'm using Jacquard textile paint. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that it maintains a soft hand to the fabric. Mm-hmm. Once you heat set it, then you can wash it. And it doesn't get as plasticky feeling as some mm-hmm. of the other mediums that I've explored. But that's what works for me. Other people, I'm sure, have had great success with other mediums.
Now, I have to tell you that when I scrolled through this particular post where you're sharing this latest one, where I stopped and I went like, oh, that is how I would end was when you had just green and yellow.
It was pretty. And that was a hard step for me is what am I going to do next? Because it'll really change the process.
Right.
But that's one of the things that people say they like about my blog post is that I do post pictures along the way of kind of how it comes to life. And you can see how you could go so many different directions with one of these projects.
Yeah, it is so amazing. I mean, I really look forward to seeing where you go with this. I think you're quite talented, and I appreciate that you came on here today.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun, and I love hearing that people are excited by this. I can't wait to share it with more people.
That's the teacher in you. You know that?
That is the teacher in me. Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is. So, Colleen, visit Colleen at the Quilted Thistle. And if you happen to want her to long arm for you, she has all her information there. And follow along to see where she goes. Thank you, Colleen.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you so much.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to take a break. Then we'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once you've determined the block placement in a quilt, take a picture of the layout with your phone or digital camera. Look at the picture to make sure you still love the layout, as having a different perspective can sometimes make you see things you haven't before. Once your layout is final, refer to the image as you sew to ensure the blocks remain in their desired positions.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. For this second half of the show, I have Krista Hennebury from Poppy Print back with me. The last time we were here, we had such a great time, and she has so much information that I wanted to do a longer chat with a little bit more detail. So we are going to do a whole talk on retreats, hosting them, organizing them, taking them. And then we're going to talk about a trip that she just did to Sweden to teach and about quilting in Sweden. It's going to be so much fun. Krista, thank you for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me back, Pat.
You know, I wanted to do this sort of deeper discussion on retreats because quilters love to sew together. And you are an expert at hosting successful retreats. And so just give a little backstory. How long have you been hosting and running retreats?
I've been running retreats for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. And it all came about because I had started a UFO finishing class on Friday nights at the mm-hmm. local quilt shop where I was working part-time. Mm-hmm. And when that store closed down, the women who were attending my Friday night monthly sort of finishing times, were still keen to get together, and they asked me if I would organize a full day event. So we rented a local community hall, and I had 15 women come that very first time. And I hired a caterer, and I lost money on the event because I really had no idea what I was doing. But we had such a nice time, and they all told their friends, and I decided that I could make lasagna as well as any caterer. So I took on the food prep myself, and I started hosting a 13-hour day retreat, and I haven't stopped.
Oh, my. You know, when we talked about this before, I mean, you have done this. You do multiples of them a year, right?
Yeah, I do 6 to 8 per year.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. This is part of your business because you're a designer and you also, you know, you teach and this is one of your parts of your business. So let's talk about some tips for people who want to organize a retreat with either their sewing buddies or, you know, their guild maybe has never done one or wants to up their game. Maybe they want to make it longer, you know. So what are the things people need to look at? It's like catering.
Sure. Well, yeah. Well, I think for guild events, it's pretty easy to run a potluck type affair. But if you're thinking of running a retreat business mm-hmm. and charging people money such that, you know, you can profit from a business, mm-hmm. then I think it's a good idea to consider options in terms of affordable food or cooking for yourself. I took a course in food prep, so I have a certificate that shows that I've learned proper food prep and storage.
That's important.
Yeah, I think so. And another element, of course, is actually liability insurance, but that's a separate issue to do with the facilities and whatnot. But I think, you know, in terms of running an event, my retreats are strictly UFO-based sewing. So I'm there to help if anyone needs support, but all the other women in the room are providing that same support in terms of feedback on projects and you know, technical or sharing tips and tricks, that type of thing. But I don't do any teaching at my retreats per se. There's mm-hmm. all of us have projects to finish. And most of my customers are just looking for dedicated hours of a day where they can sit and sew and not have to worry about, you know, doing the laundry, running the kids to soccer, or preparing a meal for their family.
Yeah.
So I'm actually just completing now a manual, which I'll be offering as an ebook for sale, because I get so many requests from my blog readers looking for support on, you know, how can I run a retreat?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a, you know, there's a group of people out there looking to do this for a business as well, and I'm hoping that I can support them to start their business too.
That is a really useful, I think you're going to do real well with the book, which people can find at poppyprintcreates.blogspot.com, right?
Yes, eventually. I'm hoping to launch it in January. I have a couple of readers now going through it and looking for mm-hmm. ideas in terms of, you know, are all my questions answered? Is this really all the information I need to start a retreat business? And it covers everything from finding a suitable facility with, you know, good electrics, good accessibility, mm-hmm. a good kitchen, enough tables and chairs, that type of thing, but also has lots of detail in terms of supply lists, what you need as an organizer, what your participants need in order to have a successful day. And there's a chart there to determine your costs and whether or not this is a business you want to get into, mm-hmm. and that type of thing. I think it will be very comprehensive and useful also for guilds who want to run sewing days for their members successfully.
What is one of the top things that new retreat people don't seem to either know how it works or maybe don't even realize they need to think about? Like, what's one thing that's happens?
Well, often people don't bring enough to work on.
Oh.
Just, you know, people will bring one project and they're just not used to having uninterrupted sewing time. So I've had a couple people come for their first time and, like, they're sewn out by 2 in the afternoon and they still have till 10 o'clock at night. So, you know, people are throwing charm packs at them, put this together.
Right.
But I think that in general, people who attend retreats do kind of know what to expect because often they're invited by friends who explain it to them. But the biggest thing that people do forget actually is their foot control, because often people just take the machine off their sewing desk or sewing table at home and mm-hmm. forget that there's that important piece on the floor that also has to come too.
Now, and it's deadly if you've forgotten your foot pedal. You're like trying to find the nearest quilt shop so that you can borrow one, you know, it's like.
We've had it happen.
I know nobody brings extra foot pedals with them unless they have a separate machine. So let's talk about the organizers and setting up a room. What makes for a good workflow for this type of for a retreat? Because that's a little different than a classroom where you don't usually have as much space.
Absolutely. Well, for my retreats, I rent a community hall, which is the size of a gymnasium. So it's quite large.
Oh, wow.
And I have 25 people, so myself plus 24 customers. And one of the things I talk about in the manual is how to set up a friendly room, because a classroom setting, either a giant horseshoe shape or rows of desks where people are looking at the person's back in front of them, make for a very impersonal space. And when you're sewing with 24 people for 13 hours, it's nice to be able to have conversation. Mm-hmm. So I set up my room in sort of conversation groups. So everyone gets their own 6-foot banquet table, which is a lot of space. But if you have people sitting across and looking at each other, then it helps a lot for sharing and lively conversation. And I think the noise level in my retreat space is a testament to how well this setup works, because everyone's chatting all day and having fun. So I set up 4 group tables, and they're typically 6 tables each. One group has 7. I have sort of put 1 across the end. But so it's rows of tables, two, like the long sides together, and people are looking across at each other, and then another set of long tables off the end, and then sometimes a person across the end of 2 tables. And this works really well, and there's a big space in the middle of the room where people can gather and share things. That's where how we do show and tell. We sort of stand up and gather in a big space in the middle of the room.
Mm-hmm. Do you also have like an agenda that you give people at all?
I do let people know what to expect in terms of meal times and show and tell, but really it's an open day. We arrive at 9 a.m. and I have, muffins or homemade granola bars, and coffee and tea are always going all day in the kitchen. So that sort of arrival setup happens at 9, and then we eat lunch around 12:30, and then at 4 o'clock we have tea and cookies and show and tell. And then about 6:30 we have dinner, and everyone needs to be packed up and out of the hall by 10 p.m. So there's a schedule of, arrival, meals, show and tell, and departure. But other than that, it's pretty much wide open for the day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, do you ever do them for more than one day at a time? Because like a lot of guilds will book it for 3 days.
Yes, I do. I retreat with a few friends to a couple different locations throughout the year, to a cabin or someone's home. Mm-hmm. But then every November I have an overnight retreat, and I joke with my day retreat customers that I had them coming to the day retreats for about 6 years until I decided to invite them on a sleepover. And group dynamic is really important to me. Mm-hmm. And I attended some retreats that were open registration and found that it just wasn't as friendly, and people came in tight groups of friends, and I like my group to, everyone gets along. We range in age from 40 to 75, but we've all got something to contribute, and people really enjoy everyone else's points of view, whether it's on, quilting or raising a family or professional life. So that part of it's really fun.
And the dynamics are important because, a classroom environment, you're there to learn, you have an instructor, but retreat environment where it's a sew your own things, people will end up talking about all kinds of things, talk about their life, and it's nice to be compatible, and particularly if you then longer, then you're there in the evening, and then you're to the next day and breakfast.
Absolutely. So my overnight retreat is 3 nights, and we go to every November to a mountain lodge where there's no cell coverage. Mm. And so we have Wi-Fi, but people are pretty committed to being present, and it's a nice space. We have a lounge where there's a fireplace and couches for people who want to, you know, chill out and leave the activity of the sewing room and maybe go knit for a while or hand sew a binding. The only organized activity that I do on my overnight retreats is a block lotto. And that is sort of a mystery block. People are told what fabrics to bring, but I give them the directions when we arrive.
Ah.
And it's sort of it's a little diversionary tactic that if people get mired down in their giant queen size quilt they're making, this gives them an opportunity to take an hour out, make a block, throw it up on the design wall. And at the end of the weekend, we draw names from people who've made the blocks, and someone goes home with, you know, a quilt top worth of blocks, so that's quite fun. But that's the only organized activity in my 3-day retreat.
Sounds like, you know, everybody's going to want to come hang out with you. It's sounds fabulous.
It's pretty low key.
Yeah. That's good though. That's good. You know what we're going to do, Krista? We're going to take a little break.
Sure.
And when we come back, I'm going to wrap up this chat with just one or two things about being a good retreat person. And then we'll talk about your trip to Sweden and quilting in Sweden.
Sounds great.
So we'll be right back with American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, Rotary cuts several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I'm talking to Krista Hennebury from Poppy Print, and we are doing a little deep discussion on retreats. So, Krista, as a retreat participant, what are like the top, you know, two or three things that make it successful for a person to go on a retreat?
Well, I think being organized ahead of retreat is a great thing. I often encourage people to pre-cut their projects before retreat so that they can just sit and get down to business. I think a relaxed attitude and open mind are also, you know, positive attitude, really important, because you're going to be in a room filled with, you know, lots of other women, and they're going to want to share, and you're going to want to share. And so, you know, keeping yourself open to conversations and learning new things is is a really, I think, good approach. And one thing that I always ask my participants is to respect the timing of arrival and departure of the retreat, because I know it's fun to get there early, but as an organizer, it's a nightmare when you have people, you know,
lined up out the door.
Yeah, it's stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is there one thing that is sort of like the sparkling thing that somebody new at retreat discovers? What have people told you this, like when they've done their first retreat, that makes them excited?
I don't know. I think the big thing is just time to devote to yourself and what you love to do, and the total lack of distraction in terms of personal commitment outside of quilting. I think people just so appreciate that.
Yeah, that's what I hear too. It's like the being able to totally devote yourself to what you love to do in an uninterrupted way has been what people love about it.
Yeah, it's pretty special.
Yeah. Well, we're going to switch gears then, because you actually just came back the other day from teaching in Sweden, and you told me that this opportunity and other opportunities have come about because of one quilt you made. It's like a fairy tale, Krista.
Aw, it's been pretty special for me. I've been teaching for 12 years, but often teach, tips and tricks type classes, but also classes on other people's patterns, mm-hmm. and with permission, of course. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of looking for a niche for myself that would give me the satisfaction of teaching something that I had sort of thought of myself and felt strongly about. And I made this little quilt I called Temperature Check, but when I made it, I used a piecing technique that allows people to create improvisational, almost like a wonky piano key border units. Mm-hmm. And it's a fast technique, starting with 5-inch charm squares that is really fun. And it's a way for me to support traditional quilters who really want to try a modern approach, mm-hmm. but they're nervous of improv with no destination, and they don't want to waste
no
the fabric. Yeah, you know, starting with no plan and just starting to cut up fabric can be really intimidating for folks who've been working with patterns their whole quilting life, mm-hmm. and this little quilt has taken me to many places.
Now, you know, when you started teaching this out in a bigger circle of the world, did you ever expect to go to Sweden?
No, absolutely not. Never occurred to me.
So how did this happen?
Well, it happened through the determination of one of my blog readers and new friends. Her name is Stina, and she was commenting on a blog post I did with photos of a workshop that I gave to my Modern Quilt Guild here in Vancouver. And she said, "Oh, I'd love to take this workshop, but sadly you live too far away." And I jokingly replied to her, because I reply to almost all my comments, "Well, I love to travel." Yeah. And next thing you know, I got an invitation from their National Quilt Guild to attend their annual meeting, which happened last weekend. Oh. And I accepted immediately. I hardly ever say no to travel. And off I went to Sweden. So I taught for the first weekend at their national annual meeting. And then I traveled to the north, up to 65 degrees latitude, almost at the Arctic Circle, to teach in a little town, which is called Piteå, and I taught 8 students up there for 2 days.
You know what? I was following along because I knew you were doing this in advance, so I was following along, looking on your Instagram and watching the things. Tell me, what did it feel like? What did the quilters feel like there, like when you went to the national conference, which is going to have a much larger, you know, there was like a show, right, and vendors and everything. Did it feel different than quilters other places?
A little bit. I mean, in terms of what people are using, they do have trouble getting a lot of fabric in Sweden. They don't have a lot of stores, and they don't have fabric production in that country. So everything they have typically, if they don't live close to a quilt shop, they have to order from overseas. Mm-hmm. So I had some women in my classes using older fabrics, or we did have one language barrier issue, and that was, this quilt looks really great, made in solids, but when the women Googled the word solid or tried to translate it, it came out as hard and, you know, like solid as in the solid wood.
Oh.
And they refer to solids as one color fabric.
Oh.
And so that was an interesting learning for me in terms of working in a foreign language, that, I wouldn't have known that that would be a problem for them. And so, you know, some people brought prints, but that's fine. Their quilts are going to turn out riotous and beautiful anyway. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the vibe and the quilting, quilters are the same the world over. Mm-hmm. Everyone's friendly and generous. And I would say the Swedes are a little more reserved, and they were focusing on my teaching in a different language, so they were very attentive, and you know, that was interesting. It was cute when I left the classroom because we had to iron in the hallways for safety reasons at this facility. The minute I left the classroom, they would all start talking in Swedish.
Yeah.
And then the minute I came in, they would be very studious and working, yes. working. And partly I think it was they didn't want to be rude and speak mm-hmm. Swedish in front of me. But I let them know that I was totally okay with them right. talking to their friends.
Did you have a translator in class, or did they all speak enough English to follow along in English or understand enough English?
Yeah, they did. They understood enough okay. English. And there were definitely some people. I had two women from Finland who were mm-hmm. in my class as well. And so they helped each other with the English, Swedish, mm-hmm. Finnish, because my patterns had been translated by a friend into Swedish. Ah. And it worked out. Most people there are educated in English. Mm-hmm. And I do think that maybe some of the older gals chose not to do my workshop because they were nervous of that. But everyone who did come did just great. It worked yeah. out really well.
And what did you think, what did you observe? Of their quilts that they're making, their finished quilts, like what they exhibit, is there a particular style going on there, or is it all over the place like in other, you know, everywhere else?
Well, I think it's the same as everywhere else. Definitely, I recognize some patterns that I've seen online that, mm-hmm. you know, people are reading blogs and yeah. Picking up on stuff. And not as much use of solids as I see in my modern quilting community here in Vancouver, again, because they're difficult to purchase. Mm-hmm. And there's still a very traditional, you know, patterns that are, you know, multi-block patterns with sashing, borders, cornerstones. But I think also quite a bit of art quilting. I saw mm-hmm. a lot of embellishment and experimenting with text and machine applique and thread painting, that type of thing. So I think pretty much the same kind of work you'd see at a big American show like Road to California mm-hmm. or, you know, definitely more of a traditional scene, but a huge interest in doing things in a more modern way, definitely.
Yeah, I loved seeing the photos from the classes that you posted on Instagram, you know, just to see the quilters themselves smiling, you know, that was so cool.
I think they had fun.
Yeah. Now tell me, we have about 2 minutes. Tell me what it was like then when you went to teach with a smaller group outside of town in the next area.
Well, it was really fun, actually, because I had a full 2 days. And in a two-day mm-hmm. class, you really have the opportunity for students to explore their own ideas rather than just recreate your sample. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed that, and I think they did, too, because I had a couple of women in the class who were quite a bit older, and this is incredibly new concept for them. Mm-hmm. And it was really a joy to see them take it on and want to do things differently and you know, we used a lot of design wall, trying different layouts, and it's funny when they see something like they just go, okay, yeah, and they just go for it.
Yeah, oh.
You know? Yeah, really decisive, and I enjoyed it. We enjoyed lots of tea and cake together, which is called fika in Swedish, which mm-hmm. is a time to leave the sewing machines, go sit at a separate table, and really put the phones away and enjoy a piece of cake and some coffee or tea, and sharing each other's company. It was really lovely.
Now, I loved the little cabin was it on a lake that you were at?
It was on a river called the Piteå Älva, which is the river through the town of Piteå. And I felt like I was in an IKEA catalog. I mean, the cabin was lovely with a greenhouse in the front yard and a sauna beside the shoreline. And three women I stayed there with treated me so kindly, and they made me a beautiful quilt, and we just had such a marvelous time.
The greenhouse fascinates me because it's not like flower greenhouse. It's a people greenhouse. You go sit in the greenhouse in lawn chairs and drink wine, I guess. I mean, yeah. It's just so cute.
Yeah, there's a heater in there. I mean, the growing season is so brief, so they have their tomatoes in the greenhouse, but then a dining table at the other end, and it was just fantastic. You know, and interestingly, at the cabin, there's very little electric light because in the summer when you're at the cabin, there's light for 22 hours a day. So this was quite late in the year to be using the cabin, which is not winterized. So We had space heaters and lots of candles.
And was this owned by one of the ladies you stayed with?
It belongs to her sister and brother-in-law. So it was a sort of a borrowed accommodation, if you will.
Right. I didn't know if they rented them or, you know, it's family. So that is just fantastic. Krista, what an experience you had.
It was very special. I'm super thankful for all the opportunities that quilting has given me. It's been a great year.
No, I have just enjoyed chatting so much. I really appreciate it because I know you just came back from a long trip. And thank you for jumping in here and sharing with me.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. Thanks for the call, Pat.
Okay. This is American Patchwork and Quiltings podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit allpeoplequilt.com and sign up for the newsletter, check out all the things, visit us all on Facebook, including all of my guests. And you can see what I'm doing at patsloan.com. We will be back next week with a new show.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.